A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brialso Lake puts this game away!
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Hans Olsen, Scott Girard, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Joining us now, the man, the myth, the legend, NBC Sports and ProBasketballTalk.com. It is Kurt Helin. Kurt, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing well. Doing very well. All right. So, you know, if there was a game four that I thought was going to end in a sweep, I thought it was going to be in the East, not the West, but the Lakers are done, and it is Boston that live to play another day. They're 8-point favorites tonight at home against Miami. Do you feel like Boston can send this back to Miami for game six?
I think they can. Gabe Vincent being out now with the sprained ankle does certainly matter. I mean, Gabe's been part of the hot shooting. He's frankly just outplayed Marcus Smart, right? Like, he's been fantastic. Yeah. So him being out and now them having to rely on Kyle Lowry is a risk. And that said, I guess, you know what? It's like that 8 points. I'm like, man, do I trust Boston? I guess that's really, I mean, I got a feeling the Heat are going to bring a little more focus. And I think Boston at their best can send it back. They've been at their best when their backs are against the wall. Just don't trust them. I just don't. So my guess is they send it back, but I think it's going to be closer than people think. I don't think this is some sort of, like, Miami's just not going to roll over. They had their bad game. They kind of had a bad shooting game. I think that this is a tough one. Big picture, you trust Boston to put together three more good games in a row?
No. And that's the thing, too. Boston, I mean, Miami's been shooting the ball so well in the series, and they had one dud. They shot, 8 of 32, 25%. But that's not going to happen again. I mean, they've been averaging, I think, well over 40% from the series. And if they shoot the ball well, it's lights out. And, yeah, they're not going to be duds three games in a row. It's just not going to happen.
No, and Boston shot 40% in this game, but they just haven't been consistent. It's been one of the Missoula things. He wanted to bring in the three ball more, and he did. But with that has just come the variance that comes when you shoot a lot of threes and you're not the Golden State Warriors. If you can shoot a lot of threes, but you've got to have other ways to get buckets. And they've just been way too reliant on the three this year. And they got away from, I mean, not to overanalyze the Celtics, but like last year they were just a defensive force. Like, they were going to win games with their defense, and then they were going to get some buckets. And this year they're just an offensive team, and then it's up and down.
So here comes Denver, and they're going to have to sit and wait regardless of, you know, and that's the thing. I guess when you deal with TVs, with the networks and stuff like that, you get slotted in for that game one. Was there any conversation about perhaps moving this game one up? Is that even remotely possible? I'm assuming no.
No, it has not. That conversation has not happened and was not going to happen this year. They used to send out, like, this is the start date for the finals. Unless both series end, like, in a sweep or in five games, in which case we're going to bump it up 2 days, and this is the start date for the final. But what I was told was it's not even ABC, like, not liking that, which, you know, obviously they don't love it. No network loves it. It's the bigger issue was international. This is such a huge international broadcasting, and they want the date set in the same way that, you know, the Champions League in soccer. I'm trying to think of major international events or the Super Bowl. Hey, you know what it is. And so they don't change it anymore. This year, when the season schedule came out and the dates for the season came out, the final started June 1st, and they were going to start June 1st regardless. And it's just, for the NBA, I think it's become too big to move. So they're living with it.
So does that help or hurt Denver? I mean, the old rest versus rust argument, they've been playing so well and have been so dominant in the first three series and taking in over a week's rest. Does that concern you at all if you're a Nuggets fan?
Probably a little, but at this time of year, I don't know. There's a trade-off there of just some rest, like you said, just getting some rest, like just getting your bodies right.
Yeah.
You've just gone through a few series and it's been physical. So I don't think it bothers them that much. I don't think it's at this time of the season, it's going to take them long to get, you know, back in. And I don't, unless that other series goes seven until Monday night, like kind of a healthy gap for, if it ends tonight, it's a healthy gap for Miami. And even if it goes till Saturday, that's probably about the ideal gap, isn't it? About 4 days, 4 to 5 days. Like, you get some rest, but you don't really lose anything. This is a little longer, but after counting everything with preseason, what are they at, 100 games and change, whatever number they're at, like, I think they'll pull it together.
So you tell me if I'm wrong. You're in California, and you cover, you know, you have access to Lakers far more than we do, but I know LeBron took a lot of heat because people thought when he was talking retirement that everybody's, oh, it's LeBron being LeBron and making it about him, and he's just trying to get attention on him. But when you listen to the comments, and we played it a few times, it really felt like it was a stream of conscience. Like he was just talking what was on his mind. And I think he just saw his good friend retire in Carmelo. I think that he was beat up. He was tired. He's worn out. He's 38 years old. And I think in his mind, he truly thought, like, I'm going to consider retirement. Now, honestly, I don't think there's any way it ever happens, but I think there was some genuine thought there at that moment when he was talking about spending some time and thinking about it.
That is why you are one smart man, right, Scotty, right there? Because, I was in the room, and I was at the game. I was in the room when he started talking about this. Everybody kind of looked at each other for half a second, like, is he going where I think he's going with that? But it really genuinely was, I think, just that. I think it was a combination of exhaustion. I mean, remember, all but 40 seconds of game four. And by the way, I only think he skipped those last 40 seconds of the first half to avoid the halftime interview walk-off, like, just so he didn't have to deal with it. I genuinely think he took himself off and went straight to the locker room so that they couldn't get in for that. He was exhausted. He was frustrated. And I think that that's part of it. And Carmelo, I think, does factor in. But I think the frustration is the key here. I think, to me, he just, I mean, again, 40.1, was one assist or one rebound short of a triple-double. Huge night. And they lose. And he's like, we're not good enough. And I think that mostly what this was just that. This was a shot across the bow to the front office of, hey, we're not good enough. We did better. You did great at the trade deadline. I'm out here as your best player and shot creator when I probably have to have off-season foot surgery. You got to get some more people. And I think that that's genuinely what it was.
You know, if you look at their off-season, they actually have some flexibility. I mean, obviously LeBron and AD are eating up a lot of the cap. But other than that, it's pretty wide open to try to get something going and be aggressive.
A little bit, yes. But their problem is, If they have two plans, they could strip this thing down of their depth and go get another shot creator. But I don't think that that's the route they go, A, because they just did that. Like, how'd that Russell Westbrook thing work out for you? I don't think they're going to give up their depth for this. I think they are hell-bent on keeping Austin Reeves, and it probably is going to cost them because somebody is going to come in big with them. And, the teams with cap space, like, you know who could use a guard like Austin Reeves? You look really good in San Antonio right now with Devin Vassell and everybody, and next to Wembanyama. Like, suddenly, that's an interesting. Like, somebody's going to come after. Maybe it's Houston, maybe it's Orlando. and they're going to have to pay up to keep him. If they want to keep him and Rui, that wipes out trying to go get, you know, I don't really think they'd go after. I know that the front office was cool on the idea of Kyrie Irving, but going and getting somebody in a free agent, with Fred VanVleet, whoever, going and getting somebody as a free agent, I think it's going to be them trying to make a trade, though. I think they pick up Michael Beasley's $16 million option, largely because they can then send it out with something. And I think that, but I think that they realized, look, Anthony Davis is Anthony Davis. He can be an elite player. He can be an all-NBA level player. He doesn't create his own shot. It was Austin Reeves and LeBron creating shots, and you're going to have to get somebody else into that mix. Because LeBron, again, 39 next year with all those miles, you can't ask them to do this like that.
I'm Dave Cauley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Yeah. So you're not... You're not buying the Kyrie stuff. I know he was sitting courtside for a couple games there in L.A. You're not buying that?
I think Kyrie would like it. I think LeBron would like it. I know that the Lakers are cool on the idea. And again, if bringing back Reeves and Hachimura is the goal, and I know that that's the front office isn't just giving lip service to we want to bring them back. If that's the goal, then they just went out of unless Kyrie Irving wants to come there and play for the mini-mid-level exception or something, like unless he's willing to just take a massive pay cut. I don't think it's going to happen. People I've talked to around the league just think he ultimately re-signs in Dallas, and Dallas probably trades him, but it's just they need him. He needs money. He wants 3 years. It'd be something like that. I don't know. By the way,
so if you bring back,
I'd give him 3 years, but there you are.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, I mean, but if you bring back Rui and you bring back Reeves, then essentially you're running it back. And then if I'm LeBron, I'm looking around and saying, okay, well, you know, outside is that trade you mentioned. I don't know how come. Yeah, I mean, we'll be at best a 6 seed, maybe a 5 seed, and then probably a first or second round exit.
You just can't, as much as you can get, look, this is what they can be, what we saw, this is what we can be with peak LeBron and peak Anthony Davis. They're both going to miss 20 games next year because, I mean, I'm forgiving LeBron for that a little bit because, again, I mean, it's not like he hasn't been durable over the course of his career, but they're going to miss time and they can't carry that. Anthony Davis can't, and LeBron just at this point can't carry that kind of load. It's what D'Angelo Russell gave them in the regular season, but he's got to this series and it was just a bad matchup for him. And I'm not sure I'm not sure if he's back at the. I mean, somebody's going to give him $20 million a year, and I'm not sure that's going to be the Lakers. And by the way, it shouldn't be Utah either.
Yeah. What does Jordan Clarkson look like on this Laker roster?
See, that's the kind of guy they could use. Somebody who could come in and a sixth man of just like, hey, come in with this second unit. Here's the ball. Go nuts. I that's somebody they could use. A true, what do you call it, a volume scorer off the bench, an old school Lou Williams type. Like, just go. You just go get buckets.
Yeah.
I think that they need that in that second unit, somebody who can keep that second unit close by just lighting it up. And I think they'll be a very good defensive team next year. The depth is an issue.
Kurt Helin, NBC Sports and ProBasketballTalk.com joining us. Kurt, when you look at kind of the landscape of what's going on right now in terms of the Jazz, I don't think they'll be selecting 3 first-round picks. I think there's going to be some movement there. What kind of considering the bevy of picks that they have, if they wanted to move up, how high do you think they realistically could? 5, 6? I mean, I don't think they certainly can't get top 3, but could they move up to 5 if they wanted to?
4 is available as well, Houston, but they're going to ask a lot, too. I'm not sure if you can get there. But some teams, Houston, maybe. I mean, this is something where you're going to have to throw in a sweetener. It's not just going to be picks for picks. You're going to have to throw in a player. But Houston, if they get James Harden, and I think I've said this on the show before, but I'll say it here again, that's not just smoke. That Houston Harden is... I don't know that it's going to happen, but there is fire there. That's not just a smoke. If they're looking to bring in veterans, then they can you can package two for one. Like they'd be if you can send them somebody who can help them put depth around that and a pick. You know, they'd seriously consider that kind of thing. And then you get up to four. Six is definitely available. Orlando's looking. I don't think Orlando's dying to pick 6 and 11. So it kind of depends on what you throw at them, too. But there are certainly picks available. Three is going to be pricey just because it's just more than I think you're willing to give up because you're getting a very – I mean, if Henderson falls to that spot, you're getting a really good player. And even if Brandon Miller falls, you're getting a really good player. And they want players who help them now. Maybe – I mean, you'd have to give up a lot of depth to get there. You'd have to give up real quality because they still want to re-sign Jeremy Grant. They've got Anthony Simons, and they still want to chase it right now with Damian Lillard. They're not looking to move on.
With that said, how surprised would you be if Portland picks at three? Because it does seem like they want to move that thing in terms of a veteran that can help them win right away.
It's not crazy. I ultimately, this comes down to this is an ownership level decision. Generally, I'm a fan of, man, let the basketball people make the basketball decision. Stay out of the way. You know, hey, Ryan Smith, you brought in Danny Ainge. Get out of Danny Ainge's way. But there's times Danny Ainge has to go to Smith. I mean, you obviously the owners talk to him, but there's times like, hey, this is your call. Do you want to get out of the Damian Lillard business? Is ownership level call. And if you are thinking of doing that, then Scoot Henderson's great. And frankly, even in a little bit in a transition, I don't think they'd trade him automatically this summer. Scoot Henderson in the backcourt with him, and then Jeremy Grant up front. Like, suddenly, that's not a bad team in the short term. It's not going to be enough to keep Damian Lillard happy long term, but you can sell that for now and then trade him, you know, at the deadline or next summer or whatever. And by the way, people didn't watch him. He made All-NBA for a reason. I think he did make All-NBA this year. I know I voted him in. He was really good this year. They were terrible. He was amazing.
Yeah. So, you know, I call, you know, 30-plus college basketball games a year for Utah State. I saw the rule that college basketball put in with the technical awarded to a flop. Absolutely hated it. I know the NBA is flirting with it and might, you know, test it out during Summer League. I'm telling you, Kurt, it's awful. It's awful. And if they do it for a year, it's going to go away.
What did you dislike about it? Because my first thought was that I know that everybody said hallelujah, but I'm like, the devil's in the details of what it ultimately looks like.
Well, okay, so first off, it slows the game way down because especially the first part of the season, it's going to be a point of emphasis, so they're going to call it like crazy. Yeah. And frankly, I think it's a disservice to the official because you're asking your official to judge intent. And especially with the archaic charges that get taken all the time in college, you're essentially, if a guy flops, more often than not, he's going to give up a bucket if you don't call it, and then you're adding a free throw on top of it. So when we're incentivizing guys to try to draw charges and get in there and take contact, but if they don't do it right, then they're going to get hit with a flop. I say the way to avoid flopping is, hey, look, you know, don't make any call. Don't call a foul and then have a 5-on-4 advantage, which usually leads to a layup. So I just think it slows the game down. It puts the officials in a bad spot. There's going to be a ton of really controversial calls that are going to be that everybody's going to hate. It's just it muddies up the water. I understand why you want to do it, and I get the intent of doing it. But the execution, like you said, the devil's in the details. It does not translate as well as people think it will.
Yeah, because my first thought was, too, when I really started thinking about it, I'm like, well, you just added three reviews a game.
Like, yes.
At least early in the season, and then that you're trying to get away from those. So, yeah, that makes sense.
So do you think it's likely?
I not in the short term. Like you said, they might try it out at Summer League. If they tolerate it at Summer League, it gets rolled into next G League season. Like, I think that that's something you work out at a lower level before you bring it. But, man, that's easy to say at the G League level where the games are, I mean, there's cameras at the games, but it's very different than the NBA level where there's a lot more cameras, a lot more bright lights, but also it's, like you said, you're judging intent, and it's hard with even the camera angles. Marcus Smart doesn't just flat-out flop. He just wildly exaggerates contact. But there's contact. Yeah. Like, so what is, hey, that guy was a little off balance and fell versus a flop. Versus, I mean, yeah. I think, like you said, I just don't think there's going to be, you can tell a flop when you see it sometimes, but it's not always a clear, bright line like people like to think it is.
All right, finally, a lot is, you know, Lisa Salter took a lot of, she got beat up pretty good considering the fact that she said, well, I haven't watched Jokic play a lot, and boy, he's a really good player. And yeah, it's a bad look. You don't admit to that, even if it's true. You don't admit to it because it's your job to keep track. But are the Denver Nuggets, have they been disrespected by the league and the national talking heads? And, because right now there's this cry for, hey, let's stop talking about the Lakers and stop talking about the team that beat them in four games.
Yeah. I think that part of I can't believe she kind of said that publicly, but I'm not sure people I say that saying, have you watched Inside? I love Inside the NBA. Those guys don't watch that much basketball, man. Like, they really don't.
No.
It's a great barbershop talk show, but good Lord, the knowledge can be painful at that. They play a whole game they play a whole game of who's he play for, but honestly, occasionally those guys are like, yeah, who does he play? Like, even though that's right, he switched teams this summer too. Like, yeah. That said, I think I think this is good for the league in this sense. And there is no way the suits at ABC were rooting for Denver Miami out of this outcome, out of the possibilities. But I think it's good for the league to get this guy on this stage because he is not only just so much fun to watch, but also he's a fun guy. He's a fun interview. He is entertaining. He's got a little Tim Duncan. I don't really want the spotlight that much. I don't care about the spotlight, but he's entertaining and fun. Look, I was watching him warm up before game four, and you know, every team's got to have a 6'9" assistant trainer out there. So that there's 6'10" guys. So the big guy's got somebody to bang on a little bit. And that guy had to step away for, I don't know, whatever reason. He stepped away. So Jokic's last play, like, of warm-ups, kept some 6'3" assistant trainer on him, just backs the guy. He's working on post moves. He just backs the guys down and dunks on him, then looks at the assistant trainer and gives him the too short and laughs and walks off. They're all DeAndre Jordan's cracking up on the sideline. Like, everybody's having a good time. Like, that personality, you just don't see it enough from them because he's not out in social media the same way, but I think on this stage people get a sense of, like, he's really fun. He's a great guy. So hopefully we get to see more of this, but I think you're right. I think they got ignored partially because there was so much other drama. Everybody else, the Lakers are always drama. Kevin Durant's getting traded into the conference. There's everything going on with Memphis. So the top teams, the biggest names in the West were kind of dramatic. And Denver just kept winning and doing it kind of quietly and happily out of the spotlight, and now can complain that they weren't in the spotlight.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think they were too bummed out about it during the regular season, and now they can use it to their advantage. Like, nobody thought we'd be here. So,
hey, if there's one thing, I was about to say professional athletes in general, but professional athletes in particular are good at, it's straw man arguments to fire themselves up.
Oh, yeah. Well, always a pleasure, Kurt. Thanks for your time, and look forward to catch up with you again next week.
Look forward to it, Sky. Take care of yourself, man.
You got it. There he is, Kurt Helin, NBC Sports and ProBasketballTalk.com.
I'm Dave Cauley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.